My name is Kyle C, and today on The Stoop, I ask a question, a simple question. And this is posed to all the listeners out there, to all you West Indians, and to all of you that love and enjoy our culture. If there was a West Indian Caribbean Food Hall of Fame for the best meals, and you could only nominate three, which meals would get inducted into the hall? We all have our favorites, from the ones we love the most to the ones that we think should make it into the hall. And we'll get into that and explain the process here next on The Stoop. And before I begin, I want to let you know a couple of things first. Starting Monday on October 16th, you can listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher under the name South Shore Ave. So go ahead and find me on that as well. I will be loading up some of my favorite and most popular episodes in the history of South Shore Ave Radio as well for you to check out. So go ahead, subscribe, log in, check out the South Shore Ave. Make sure you check us out. And also, as usual, I'll clear my throat for that. Make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAve.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAve.com. It's The Stoop on South Shore Ave Radio. Welcome to The Stoop. My guest today is a friend of the podcast. He's a West Indian foodie, and he's the CEO of the hashtag Pork Life. So much so that if myself or Pork are hanging off a cliff and he can only save one of us, all I ask is that you tell my family I love them. Please welcome Hafiz Gafoor to The Stoop. What's good, brother?
What's up, Kelsey? What are you saying, man?
It's nothing much, sir. Seriously, would you save me before Pork? I don't know.
I'd have to think about it.
Yeah.
I think I would save you still. Just because I'm afraid of D.
Now, before we get into the nominees for the West Indian Food Hall of Fame, I can't do that without getting into what your three meals are, what your nominations are would be for it. So
there's so much.
I know.
I'd say number three would be jerk. And I don't want to specify whether it's jerk pork or jerk chicken because in my mind, you could jerk pretty much anything. So I'm just going to leave jerk as its own category.
It could be jerk mint tea, jerk Eddie.
Well, jerk fish, jerk pork, you know, jerk chicken. Those are my top three. So I have jerk as my three spot. Number two would be curry goat for sure. And then number one would be oxtail.
Oxtail?
Oxtail.
What happened to oxtail? It's like a drug like it is for myself?
Absolutely. I mean, like most West Indians, I grew up on it. I think it kind of meets all type of things that most West Indians like in food. West Indian people like meaty type dishes. They like saucy type dishes. And for whatever reason, they like hard to get to meat type dishes. And oxtail can be blasted difficult to eat at times, depending on how it's cooked.
Right.
So, you know, you need to bite, twist, suck, crunch, and
leave marrow.
Exactly. So, in terms of like, you know, oxtail, outside, obviously the flavor of it really appeals to my palate. I just enjoy digging into it.
Yeah, I think for me, yeah, my top three, and I mean, yeah, there's so much dishes out there. I know it's funny, when we did this survey, a lot of people are like, every time they sent me a message, they're like, man, you just made me hungry. Like, just thinking of all the different kind of food that you would like. I would say, for myself, I would say bacon saltfish is definitely on the top three for me.
I knew you had to throw a fish in there.
Yeah, it has to be. And it could be the regular bake or fried bacon, no matter which one. Yeah, no matter which one. Either way, it don't matter. The second one will be oxtail for sure. Don't matter which. It could be Trini style. It could be Jamaican style. I kind of prefer Jamaican style a little bit, but it doesn't really matter. That's like a weakness. And then,
For me, like when it comes to oxtail, it just matters if it's cooked properly.
Right.
I mean, whether it's Jamaican made or Trini made or any other West Indian islands made, you know, if it's not cooked right, it ain't gonna taste right.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. As long as it's falling off the bone.
That's exactly it. You know,
that's all we care about.
They slow cook it or they pressure cook it before they season it up and stew it down. As long as it comes out nice. I mean, we've both eaten some tough oxtail.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, you still try and soldier that down, but it's just not the same when you're fighting to eat the food, you know, as opposed to just enjoying it.
It's true. No, you're right. And you definitely don't want that. I think my number one, for me, my personal number one is roti. And it could be chicken, it could be potato in China. I mean, I don't really eat a lot of red meat, but you know, it doesn't matter. Like, I have that's probably like my weakness if it comes to like a meal. Everybody has their food kryptonite. For me, that's one of them. I'll give you a joke. I remember it was probably about 7 years ago. So it was after your reception that you had for your wedding. I'll never forget this. We came back to your spot. A whole bunch of us came back to your spot about 3 a.m. after this thing was done.
And my dad had them two massive Dutch pot.
Yeah. And I remember you're like, yo, you want something to eat? I'm like, nah, I'm good, man. You know, I had enough to eat at the reception, da 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 da. And I think your mother asked him like, nah, I'm good. You know? And then your father's like, you want food? I said, nah, sir, I'm good. He's like, listen, I'll bust up shut. I'm like, all right, fix me a plate. Just go ahead, fix me a plate. Yeah, it's a weakness, man. It's like, I can't say no to roti. Anytime that's offered, I'm just like, all right, just run it. Just fix a plate. Go. Just go ahead.
You know, one of the things I really admire about West Indian food, and maybe I am biased because I grew up in a home where my mother's Jamaican, my father's Guyanese. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up around a bunch of Trinis. Right. So I've been heavily exposed to various forms of West Indian food. And the one thing that I say it all has in common is it's all very flavorful and filling foods.
Yeah.
And it's all food that can be created in different ways. I mean, you could take a roti and you could mix in any meat you want. You don't even need to eat meat with roti. You could go with fish, you could go with a beef, you could go with a chicken, a goat, and then you can just throw some pepper sauce on that, roll it up and eat it. Right? And I think that, you know, if you go back historically and try to kind of understand where a lot of these foods came from, right? Mm-hmm. Some of it was slave food.
Right. Right.
I mean, they wouldn't give us the nice pieces of the cow, so they give us the tail. So we season up that tail better than nobody else, and there's your oxtail.
Now it's a delicatessen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, on top of that, a lot of people, especially back then, you know, having to work outside in the heat, they needed food that can really hold them.
Right.
You know, up here in, you know, North America, you have your cereals and your lighter forms of breakfast, which, you know as well as I do, you know, after like 2 hours in the heat in the Caribbean, you're like that. Yeah, you that burn through that easy.
Real quick. Right. Exactly.
So that food needed to not just taste good. It needed to be able to hold you.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people to do hard physical work. Right. So it's not just like the food itself. It's just, you know, what it enabled people to do, which you can't discount either. Right.
Right. No, for sure. For sure. And that's a great point, because I think our culture, we have a great sense of making lemonade out of lemons. Right. And I think that's something we did as well for, you know, like we have, you know, paleo with like pig foot and stuff. And I mean, that rivals almost any dish you can think of. Right. And that was something that was just scraps for us. Right. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't need to tell anybody what's in Manishwata, right? I mean, there's all kind of things in there. Sometimes you might as well not even talk about it. Just eat it and give thanks, right?
No, for real.
Right?
For real, though.
But,
real.
You know, I didn't find that our people were ever really wasteful with food, right? They couldn't afford to be.
Yeah.
So they found ways to use what they had and to make it good enough that they can feed their families and keep them strong and healthy.
Yeah. And now look, oxtail is probably one of the most expensive meats to buy now, right? You can't even.
Absolutely.
It's not even close.
Absolutely.
Right? It's more expensive than some prime cuts of steak you can see sometimes, man. It's crazy. All right. So what we're going to do here is we're going to get into the nominations for the West Indian Food or Foodie Hall of Fame. And first off, I'd like to send a shout out to all the people who participated in my survey and sending their nominations and, you know, for their favorite foods and what should be inducted. So we'll start off with the snack and appetizer category. We had a few, I would say, honorable mentions. So we had doubles, we had fried plantain, we had fried dumpling, we had festival. Does macaroni pie count? Would you count macaroni pie?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I put it in that category, but because people are putting it as a meal. I don't know if it's necessarily a meal, but you could have it as that. But to me, I think of it as something on the side. So
that's another thing about West Indian food.
Mm-hmm.
Everything could be a meal and everything could be a snack. The amount of times I've snacked on a roti.
It's true.
Or I've snacked on pieces of jerk pork is the same way I've eaten that as a meal.
Or you had doubles and you had a couple, two, absolutely, three doubles and that held you, you know, for what?
Five doubles is a meal.
Yeah.
You don't want to eat nothing after
that. No, for real. It's true. It's true. The winner, I didn't really put this as a survey to people, but I just selected it myself. I mean, you could try to talk me off of this if you want to, but I said the winner is the patty. It's universal. You could see it in almost every West Indian restaurant or bar or store or grocery store. It crosses cultures because you see all different cultures messing with patty, especially, and it goes really good. I don't eat it this way, but I know a lot of people eat it with, you know, with cocoa bread, you know, and listeners, don't log off because, you know, just because I don't like it with the cocoa bread, I still love the patty. But, you know, I think that you could try to talk me off this if you want to, but I think honestly, that's probably the number one. If I had to select a snack appetizer for the Hall of Fame, it has to be the patty.
And so are you basing that off of just sheer popularity?
I think it's some of that. And yeah, of course, you can't have, because yeah, I guess you got to go with a certain brand of patty, too, because not every patty is a good patty.
Yeah,
right?
They got a lot of pretend patties.
Yeah, there. No, for real, though. I would say Randy's and Allen's could probably, I'm thinking of that. I'm just thinking of that, those kind of patties. I know there's others, but those ones come to mind when I think of a really good tasting patty. So I would go with those. But yeah, I would say popularity goes into it. Just accessibility.
I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Accessibility, right? Yeah. There's a lot of you mentioned it before, you know, doubles, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, one of my favorites, Pilori balls.
Right.
Right. I can eat that for days.
Right. Right. Right?
But how accessible is it?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, whether it's a good patty or a not so good patty, you could pretty much walk into most places and get a patty.
And get a patty. Yeah.
Right. You don't even have to walk into a West Indian spot to get a patty.
Yeah. True.
You know, you could go into Costco or Walmart even. And buy frozen patties. Exactly. Right. I even saw frozen Allen's at Shoppers Drug Mart.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think accessibility is probably a big reason why patties are so popular.
Yeah.
You can't discount the others, right?
No, for sure. And like I said, even for myself, I wouldn't say patty's my favorite snack or appetizer, but I would say definitely if you had to nominate one for the Hall of Fame in his first year, I would think that one would probably win the most votes, I would say. Yeah. I would think so.
And I like that you specified, you know, the two types of patties, like Allen's patties as an example.
Yeah, yeah,
because, you know, I don't like them patties that don't have enough meat.
Mm-hmm. It's all.
Yeah, or too much, like, of the flakes and the bread, but there's not enough meat in it.
Right.
Or there's too much meat in it and not enough plates.
The pastry,
flakes, and the pastry. It's got to be an even amount of both, right?
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be kind of crispy and hot on the outside and nice and hot and spicy in the inside.
No, I definitely agree with that. I definitely agree. All right, so the next category here is the Hall of Fame of drinks. Now, we have
rum, rum, and more rum.
What, and what? I mean, there's a ton of drinks that was on this list here, from Irish Moss to pineapple soda to Ting to carrot juice to peanut punch to rum punch to coconut water to Heineken to ginger beer and pear drinks. I can go on and on and on, but you know we can't nominate all of them as great as most of those drinks are, I would say. So the honorable mention. There was a tie actually between two drinks for the 11.5% We had Cola Champagne, and we had Mabi.
Two good choices. That's the tie, you said?
That was a tie for the honorable mention.
Personally, I'm a Cola Champagne guy. Mm-hmm. I don't dislike Mabi,
mm-hmm.
but that's an acquired taste.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And I, at least people I know, they either love it
or they hate it.
They hate it.
Yeah, it's this. There's right? no...
I'm one of the rare ones that I can kind of fall in between.
Yeah,
it.
Not for
I
real.
Don't hate it, but I don't love it either.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that's kind of how most people fall when it comes to Mabi.
Yeah, and I'm the flip side of it because I used to love Cola Champagne, especially when I was younger. And you know, my pops would come back home, and anytime he brought back like West Indian food, he'd bring back a Cola Champagne. You're like, yes, you know, doing the Tiger Woods fist pump. But
West Indian sweet drink, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, for sure. But as time went along, I'm like, yeah, it's a little too sweet now. I really got to be in the mood. Like, I really got to be in the mood for a Cola Champagne.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But Mabi is like the drink version of roti for me. Like if I could be full as all hell and somebody say, you're thirsty? Nah, I'm good. You want a Mabi? Of course I do. You know, and they just have to pour me a glass. You know what I mean? But that's the Trini in me. So, you know, I'm the one that loves that. But I definitely understand people who can't stand it because it is an acquired taste. You know what I mean?
It's no different than like a ting.
Yeah.
Like some people like ting. It took me years acquainted with ting. Even now, I don't really drink ting.
But I feel like Mabi's divisive. it's kind of just like, yeah, there's no gray area. You're like probably like one of the very few that just finds it okay. Most people, it's either you have to make them like a liter or a jug, or they never want to see it in their life. Like,
that's exactly it, right? I mean, I'm somewhat indifferent. If it's there and I'm offered, I'll take it. But I don't stop my fridge with it. Right?
No.
And I know people that don't ever want to see it. They don't like the taste. They don't like none of it.
Smell,
and
then have
others that that's all that's in their fridge.
Mm-hmm. Right? And it's funny. There's some like nutritional benefits to it too. It's great for your skin. It's great for your blood pressure. Now, mind you, it probably comes with, you know, diabetes. You might lose a foot if you drink too much of it. But, you know, that's the price you pay.
Everything in moderation. Right?
No, exactly.
And I think that's probably why, you know, I'll drink it, mm-hmm. right? Because there are a lot of drinks that are West Indian in nature that are good for you.
Yeah.
Right? Similar to how the food was always meant to kill two and three birds at one stone. It's supposed to taste good. It's supposed to fill your belly, give you enough energy because don't know when you're maybe next going to get your next meal.
Right?
You know, I find the drinks also packed a lot of nutrients as well, right? Mm-hmm. And so I have a... My dad's really good friend. He'll make like, you know, strong back roots for me.
Right? Yeah.
Like he, and it takes a while for him to make it and for it to ferment and become ready to drink.
Mm.
You know, maybe 4 or 5 months once you boil the roots and stuff like that. But you know what? That give you energy. It is fixed good in certain areas as well. You know, it's not like the best tasting.
Right.
I wouldn't compare it to like a Cola Champagne
mm-hmm.
or your traditional North American drink.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does for you physically is far superior. So mm-hmm. even if it's like, you know, not the best tasting, you'll still soldier it and drink it, right?
Yeah. And I think Mabi, it's funny, like Mabi, if you drink just with it without the sugar in it, it's supposed to be like the benefits that are supposed to be really great, but then I think at the same time it'll actually be the greatest acquired tasting drink of all time because nobody would like it at that point because it just tastes so disgusting. Like if you ever had it without like a lot of sugar, ooh, it's hard. It's hard. I can handle it, but
I'm different in that way. Like I will drink something that, and into certain extent, eat certain things
mm-hmm.
that maybe don't taste the best, but I know are it's really good for me.
Yeah.
I'll just deal with it, right? I know a lot of people, they can't get over
the taste
part.
Right.
But like even if I have to squint up my face and take long to eat, I'll kill it, right?
Yeah, 100%. So the winner of the West Indian Food Hall of Fame in the drinks category is Sorrel, with or without ginger. And it had about 20% of the vote. Me personally, I don't like it with ginger. I know it's sweeter without it, but I just, you know, I, again, that's the Trinidadian roots in me. I love it without ginger.
Ginger's good for you, though.
I know. I know it is. I know it is. But it just, it kills the taste. Like, that's the one I can't get over. It's weird. I can't get over that one.
Well, I could drink a bucket of that. Mm-hmm. Sorrow? Yeah. Oh, yeah. All day. With ginger, without ginger, it don't matter for me.
And lots of people like the soda version of it. But for me, like, I don't. As time goes along, I rather like the original thing. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. I don't like the carbonated version of it point in life.
I used to watch my mother make it too, right? I used to watch my mother make it. I used to watch my aunts make it. Mm-hmm. You know, where they boil the leaves on the pot and kind of pull it out together and then extract the juices and then let it sit and you get the real flavor of it, right? And, you know, for me, is also, I also took, you know, it's funny, you know, you don't think about it when you're young and you're watching all of this stuff, you know, like I used to watch my grandmother make the curry. I used to watch my aunt, you know, prepare all the peas and take out the rolling pin and roll out the dough to make the roti. I used to watch all of that stuff and never really thinking anything about it. But like now that I'm an older man, I'm almost 40 years old. Like those images are still impressed upon me. Right. Yeah. And again, I guess the best way to describe West Indian food in general is it's soul food, man. Like it's not a fast fix. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a preparation that goes into it.
It definitely takes time.
You know, and, you know, like it may sound cliche-ish, but you have to cook with love, right?
Yeah.
And when you cook with love, that make it good. You know what I mean. You could go to some of those West Indian or so-called West Indian fast food spots, and they're trying to mass produce oxtail. Or they're trying to mass produce curry goat and it tastes like shit.
Yeah.
But if you know without knowing that curry took all day to make.
Yeah. And you can taste it right away.
And you can taste it right away, right? And it's the same thing with a sorrel.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with a ginger beer. It's the same thing with pretty much everything, because that's how they were intended to be made. It wasn't meant to be made in 5 minutes.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing with sorrel. It takes, and much like Mabi and some of these other ones, it takes some time for it to go down. You know what I mean? And that's the funny thing, because every time I think of sorrel, especially, don't you? And you got to be like me too, and as well as some of these listeners here. it always signifies, especially when you saw. You knew it was like the holidays or like a big gathering, like a big family thing was going on when you saw your mom cooking or boiling sorrel on the stove in the big pot. Once you saw that, you know it's holiday season. You know it's a big gathering. You know everybody's coming in because you know, like your mom's
not, no eggnog.
Yeah, your mom's sorrel. Yeah, your mom's not making that for two or three people. She's making that for at least 15 plus. So you know,
and more leave over for like
later, for everybody to bring home, plus for you to have for the rest of the week.
To get them jugs,
yeah,
and fill up
and the buckets
from the pots.
Yeah, right? so you knew once sorrel was out, you're like, it's going down. You knew that for sure.
I always enjoyed Christmas for that reason.
Oh no, hell yeah!
Because you know, it almost seemed like that was, especially for, you know, West Indians that came up to North America and got on the North American grind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those seem to be the times that they could really reserve to throw down.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, I used to get, you know, a lot of Jamaican dishes as well as Guyanese dishes. Like, you know, I used to, like, eat garlic pork and pepper pot and all the things that from the Guyanese side. And then I would, you know, eat same way on the Jamaican side too, right? And all of that would get fused into preparation for Christmas,
right?
So we'd get like a Jamaican type Christmas or a Jamaican breakfast with like ackee and saltfish and bami and festival and, you know, fried Kalaloo dumpling and callaloo and stuff like that. And then, you know, the Christmas Eve morning we'd get like, you know, pepper pot, you know? And then all through the holidays, it almost seemed like I was putting a piece of garlic pork in my mouth every day. Right, but then you know me and pork, so
like I said, CEO to the pork life, man. CEO to the pork life. Gotta get that hashtag on the shirt for you. All right, so we're gonna get down to the main event, the meals.
Random fact though, pigtail will sweeten any pot. The salt that draw from a pigtail is better than any over the counter salt you'll ever get, even if you don't eat the pigtail.
I don't deny that. I'll never know now because I don't need it. I'm the opposite of the pork life, man. But it's true. I can't lie. It smells great. It smells great when it's being cooked up.
Nothing will season a pot like a piece of pig, yes?
Nah, man. Nah, 100%. So we're getting down to the main course, the meals. So we're going to nominate three meals as be inducted to the West Indian Food Hall of Fame. We had a plethora. Sheesh, a humongous list. And once again, just shout out to people who gave me their options for their food categories, for sure. You got stew beef, Escovitch fish with callaloo, palau, fish broth with dumplings and provisions, chicken foot soup, rice and peas with baked chicken. Yeah, I can go on and on. Pepper pot, as we said before.
Sauce.
Yeah, man. Couscous with flying fish. You know, we can go on and on and on. But, you know, as I said before, man, you can't nominate all of them. So there's only, you know, we can only do about three, you know, for the first year. So honorable mention, I actually thought this would make the list. Akin Selfish was the second runner up. It just missed the cut. And outside of oxtail, it might be one of my favorite Jamaican meals. I can't lie. I love Akin Selfish. I didn't grow up eating it, but yeah. As an adult, whew.
Yeah, man. Akin Selfish is the real deal, man.
Mm-hmm.
Even till this day, like, you know, my parents living in Montreal, every time I bring my family down, you know, that will get made on a Saturday morning or on a Sunday morning. And I love it because, like, my kids eat it, right? Mm-hmm. They're all young, but, like, they've been introduced to saltfish and ackee and bake from, like, very young. And it's almost like an expectation when Nana comes into town or if we go into Nana's house.
Yeah, yeah. That
will get made, and watching them kill it.
Yeah, it's a pride.
It's a pride thing too, right?
No, for sure. Yeah, and I think especially if you know you have to have it with, you know, with the provisions, with the dumpling and the potatoes. Like once you have that, it's a wrap. Sweet potato, all that stuff. Mix that together, it's a wrap. The number one runner up, just missing the cut, is curry goat with rice. And some people will fight me if I say anything bad about this. So I'll let you wax poetic about this.
Well, you know what? As much as I love goat curry or curry goat or however you want to call it, a lot of people don't like goat meat, right? It's for some, it's not so much the taste, because I fear if the curry is good enough,
it'll
make anything taste nice.
Mm-hmm.
But some people just don't like the consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Of how the goat tastes. Some people don't like the bony part of it, right?
Yeah.
Everybody has their reasons, you know?
Mm.
I do know that if I was a countryman living in the West Indies, any goat on my property would get curried, and I'd have a note that actually said that. So I would let people know, you know, keep your
goat. Keep your goat away. You cross this line, it's in my Dutch pot.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but for me, I'm not like, I used to like curry goat. I don't dislike it, but it's not something that I would normally eat or order. You know what I mean? Like if somebody presents it to me, like if I was at your house or something like that, and you had some, I'd be like, yeah, I'll take a little bit. But it's not something that.
Well, the thing is with goat meat is it, you have to have the right goat meat, right? There's so much preparation that goes into goat meat, right? Mm-hmm. You can't just like how you could go into the store and you could get like a piece of chicken, you could get a leg and back, you know, providing that. You know, the chicken ain't 60 years old and look like a pigeon.
Mm-hmm.
You're pretty much good to go.
Yeah.
And it really comes down to how you prepare it.
Right.
Right. But with goat meat, you have to choose it.
Yeah.
Accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand what pieces of the goat are the most tender, which ones are the pieces that are the less fatty.
Mm-hmm.
You need to understand
what you're gonna buy.
How goats stay, like how the meat in different parts of a goat animal, you know, is and how you buy it, right?
Right.
You know, like I know that the shoulder is a popular part, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because for whatever reason in a goat, the shoulder is really meaty,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't have as much fat.
Right.
Right? But then if you go like to the back hind leg near the backside, all you're getting is fat.
Yeah.
You're getting a little bit of meat.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're getting a whole heap of fat.
Yeah.
And even if the curry is nice, you know, people don't want to suck on fat.
Yeah, right? No, it's true.
I think it also depends on there's a little bit more complexities to preparing goat meat than there is to like preparing chicken, as mm-hmm. an example, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that if you're not getting that right sample,
yeah. you know,
see, my dad is a curry man, like mm-hmm. he's a Guyanese man, and he is a wicked cook, and he could pretty much curry the shit out of anything,
mm-hmm.
and it'll taste wicked, but. He's also very particular on how he picks his goat meat
right.
and how he cuts out the fat and then seasons. I mean, you know this, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then how he cooks it. He cooks it in like Dutch pots,
right?
Where it retains the heat and holds the heat and like really tenderizes the meat,
right?
So it doesn't feel like it's tough and you're chewing on rubber.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you don't do things like that, it's gonna change your experience.
It's not
right?
gonna taste the same.
You know?
And that's it. That's what we say, right? Remember, that's something my mom used to teach me long ago. You can't eat from every hand, right?
True statement.
Yeah, you can't eat from every hand because not everybody cooks it with the same passion and the same love. They don't cook it with the same amount of time too. Like they just, you know, it could be rushed and some people don't care. Some people are like, oh, this is good goat, and you eating and you're like, what are you talking about? Like this is
straight
like,
up, yeah. some of that, if it's not prepared well, will run your belly.
Yeah, oh yeah, 100%.
I mean, you and I know, and as well as anybody who's listening to this podcast, know that bad curry will run your belly.
What? Hard.
Know, terrible, right?
Hard.
So you do need to make, like, and that's what I mean, like, goes back to our earlier point about, you know, certain dishes from a West Indian standpoint were never meant to be rushed.
Right.
Right? Mm. For reasons like that.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Right?
There's multiple reasons. It's something that took time, took care, and feed,
mm-hmm.
and you got what you got out of it based on that.
Right.
You know,
100%. All right, so I'm gonna get into the top three nominees for the West Indian Food Hall of Fame. I'm gonna rank them. I'm gonna go from bottom to the top and how they were voted on. Number three, which I actually thought would be a little higher, to be honest with you, but maybe not, because I think you can, either one of these could be number one, but sorry, I'd say the first nominee with about 10% of the votes, oxtail with rice and peas. How do you feel about that?
Oxtail and rice and peas.
You think it would be
number three?
Number three. You think it would have been higher, or you think it would have been,
you know what, right again. Where it is? It's the same thing about curry goat, right?
Mm-hmm.
People have can butcher oxtail.
Oh yeah.
You know, the tail of a cow is a tough area of the cow. It's not a tender part.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to really make sure that as a part of your preparation, you tenderize that meat so that it falls off the bone, mm-hmm. right? If you're just trying to rush and cook that like it's salmon or chicken, that's tough.
It ain't like, gonna work.
Unless you have like claws for teeth. you're gonna be struggling to tear that meat off that bone.
Yeah, it ain't gonna work.
That's it. So I get it. And also too, the consistency of it, mm-hmm. right? My wife, she's not West Indian, but she loves West Indian food, and mm-hmm. the consistency of oxtail is not appealing to her.
Right.
She loves the flavor behind it.
Mm-hmm.
She'll take oxtail gravy for days.
Yeah.
On pretty much anything she'll eat, jerk chicken, this and that, whatever, doesn't matter. She mm-hmm. she'll drink up and base her rice and peas and stuff like that with oxtail gravy.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. the oxtail itself, not necessarily what vibes with her.
Right.
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 So I get it. Some people love off oxtail, other people don't.
Yeah, it's one of those things. But yeah, like I said, for me, I mean, to me, this is probably like my favorite meal outside of roti. I love oxtail, but again, you know, as we just discussed, like this is something that, you know, it takes time to eat. It even takes time to eat because you gotta break it down, man. It's,
you need to put in some work.
Yeah,
right?
You gotta put some work in. It's kind of like when you have snapper or escovitch fish and there's a lot of bone. Like it tastes great, but
for sure,
man, you gotta sit there for a while.
Roll up your sleeves.
Yeah.
You see, here's the thing with me, right? I'm naturally a messy eater, so foods like that give me an excuse to just be myself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to try so hard, right? I was like, listen, if I'm trying to tear into this escovitch fish
mm-hmm.
that have like 100 piece of tiny bones in
mm-hmm.
it, I don't have time to be proper or dainty. Like that. Nah, yeah, man.
Just throwing away the fork.
You know, just kick it, peel it back, mm-hmm. pull the head off, mm-hmm. and start dig away at the meat in mm-hmm. between the bones.
Yeah, man.
Right? So. Sop it up with, you know, some sort of bread, whether it's hardo bread or mm-hmm. or bami or something like that mm-hmm. to eat with it. But mm-hmm. I think foods like that, some people honestly, they don't like the word. I've seen people try to eat oxtail with a knife and fork.
Yeah, you can't do that.
You can't do that.
You can't do that.
All you need with oxtail is a spoon.
For real, though. Yeah. Seriously.
You know, seriously. You use your hands to dig into the oxtail.
Into the meat,
and you use the spoon to scoop the rice and push in your mouth.
Mm-hmm. With the gravy. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, you have to. You have to. And that's something you can just eat, like, on the go either, you know what I mean?
I think me and you should teach lessons on how to eat oxtail.
Yeah, I think so. I think we should charge. We should definitely charge. Number two on the list right now would be jerk chicken with rice and peas with about 15% of the vote. And I'll be honest, Hafiz, I'm actually surprised this wasn't number one, especially considering the majority of the votes coming from Toronto. I just figured this would win just automatically. So I was kind of surprised by this, but
yeah, I'm a little shocked by that too as well.
Yeah,
even when, like, you know, like you have carnival and, you know, your different mass camps, mm-hmm. they give you your food vouchers. That's what they're giving you.
Yeah, yeah, right? Jerk. Yeah, it's always jerk.
And anytime you go like a niche med or a reggae dance or anything like that, and they have all them guys set up outside mm-hmm. of the corn soup, man. Mm-hmm. Most of those vendors
is jerk.
They're carrying more jerk than they are anything else. Right? Yeah,
exactly.
They may grab a little bit of saltfish, a little bit of oxtail. When all of that's done, it's done. And what you have leave over is the jerk.
I mean, regardless of the fact, it deserves a spot in the Hall of Fame 100%. I think that's probably one of the most popular meals. It's pretty versatile. I think most people, even outside of our culture, would mess with jerk.
100%.
And same thing with jerk. Like I like jerk, but I'm not a guy that likes it too spicy. So it has to be the right blend. You know what I mean? For it to really work. But if it's too hot, some people like it like that. I don't enjoy it quite the same. But when it's just right.
But the fact that you have the ability to range it mm-hmm. in terms of level of spiciness.
Yeah.
Right. Is what makes jerk so wicked. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. For some people, they like it mild. For others, they like it really hot. Mm-hmm. For others, they kind of like it in between. Mm-hmm. You can cook jerk any which way you want. Mm-hmm. Right? And it goes beyond chicken.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You could take that seasoning, applies to pork. It applies to fish.
Beef.
Yeah. Beef. I mean, I've never really had jerk beef before.
Yeah. But I think I've had it a couple of times.
The flavor, I can't see not going with it.
Right.
You know, but like to like season up a snapper fish mm-hmm. with jerk seasoning, you know, and you know, you stuff it with some cock soup and some okra mm-hmm. and then wrap it in foil and then lay it down on the jerk barrel just like everything mm-hmm. else. Mm-hmm. That's wicked, bro.
And listen, the jerk barrel, that's a very underrated tool. That's probably one of the greatest that's one of the greatest inventions. I still need to get one in my backyard. I like anything that's, I know that's coming out of a jerk pit, it's like, yeah, it's
there's
a must.
There's nothing like it.
Oh, no, nothing like it, man. Nothing like it.
I could smoke a whole half a pig on that thing.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's honestly, it's like, once you know what's coming off that grill, it's like, you know what's a wrap.
I think what the thing is with a jerk barrel is it locks in the heat like how a Dutch pot locks in the heat. Mm-hmm. And it keeps
the flavor,
the source of the heat
yeah.
at enough distance from the meat that it doesn't right. burn it.
Yeah.
It smokes it.
Yeah.
Right? You know, your traditional barbecues may have, give or take, 6 to 7 inches from where the heat panels are
right.
to where the grill is. Mm. Some, the smaller ones, are actually even closer.
Right.
But in a jerk barrel, you're like 12 to 15 inches because it's in a barrel.
Right.
So all the coals crater at the bottom.
Right.
And it gives enough separation from the coals and the meat so that you won't burn the meat before it cooks.
Yeah.
Right? And if you need to flip the coals, you can do that while you're still cooking.
Right. And it doesn't affect what's on the grill.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, 100%. That goes together like Bati and bench, as they say, right? Like, like you, like the jerk pit is honestly, it's
to be honest, it doesn't even matter if it's jerk. It could be anything.
Oh no, anything, barbecue, anything, right? Anything.
The only thing is, it takes time.
Yeah, right? But I associate it with jerk every time I have it.
100%.
Yeah, 100%. All right, so the number one meal for the West Indian Food Hall of Fame. Man, I'm almost getting emotional about this, dude. With almost 20% of the vote, is boneless chicken roti. Trinidad, where are my people? I am actually a little surprised that this actually was number one.
Like, why?
You know what? Because, like I said, the majority of the votes coming from Toronto, I just figured jerk would be number one. I figured roti would definitely be in the top three. You know, but I was actually surprised seeing the amount of different cultures, because I didn't just ask just Trinidadians, or, you know, I asked a wide range and just random selected people from different islands, different cultures, and everybody had that, you know, as one of their things.
Here's
even
the
Jamaicans
thing, though.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though, right? Roti goes across all Caribbean countries.
Right. Right.
Jerk doesn't.
Right.
Jerk has been adopted by other Caribbean countries,
right?
But its main source is Jamaica. Mm-hmm. I know some Trinis that, and because I've been to Trinidad about four or five times, that mm-hmm. can throw down a wicked jerk.
Yeah,
right. And I'm not saying that other countries can't.
Yeah,
but it's something that they adopted, as opposed to it being inherent to them. Mm-hmm. Everybody has had roti.
Yeah,
right. Every country in the Caribbean has their version of roti, whether it's like chicken or beef or conch or mm-hmm. goat. It doesn't matter, but it's all wrapped in a roti, mm-hmm. right? So I think just by nature, mm-hmm. you know, roti is going to cover a bigger mass, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And chicken is the universal meat. So, you know, that's not surprising.
But I think it's also one of the most versatile meals as well, because you can have it with or without peas in terms of the roti skin. You can have it either, even if you don't have it without peas, you can have it just regular paratha, or you can have it loose.
Yep.
You can have the busam shot, which is a lot of people's favorite versions.
For sure.
Just for the listeners
There's
who
so
don't know.
So many different ways you can
yeah,
eat it.
Yeah, but just for the listeners who don't know, like, busam shot is basically, it's roti skin that's basically, it looks torn and kind of shredded. It has that kind of appearance to it.
Looks like somebody bust it up.
Right, exactly. Just hence the name, right? So, and you can have it with, you know, you can have it folded. You can have it just on a plate with the meat beside it or whatever else beside it. It can go with almost any kind of meat. It can go with stewed chicken. It can go with curry, goat, chicken, beef.
You can go with fish.
Any fish, shrimp. You can have it without meat. You can have it just potato and chana. You know, you throw some cuchilla in there, some pepper sauce, it's one of the most versatile meals that, like, looking on this list, as you were saying before, you're right, it can kind of cross different types of stages.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
And it was heavy. Mm-hmm. It kept you from being hungry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it would last a long time. Mm-hmm. It tastes good, and you could pretty much mix it in with pretty much anything you wanted.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, as much as, you know, personally, we love the ox, you know, as much as jerk is probably one of the most recognized foods from a Caribbean culture perspective that, you know, will get, you know, made at everything from parties to events, to every pretty much West Indian fast food restaurant there
mm-hmm.
is,
mm-hmm.
you know, roti is absolutely universal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it touches multiple cultures, and you can pretty much mix it in with anything else.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Like, you can substitute rice and have that.
100%.
And the same thing. It's probably even, like, it's more filling. Usually you can't have a good roti and not be satisfied.
Absolutely. And then, like I said, it doesn't matter what it is that you actually eat with it, because
yeah.
it goes with
everything.
Most things.
Yeah. It's like a pair of black shoes. You can wear it with anything.
I'd be here all day talking to you about all the things I've eaten roti with.
You'd be like Bubba from yeah, Forrest Gump.
Roti end. Exactly. Right.
So there you have it. Just to recap. So our three meals are boneless chicken roti, jerk chicken with rice and peas, and oxtail. Our Hall of Fame drink is sorrel, and our Hall of Fame snack appetizer is the patty. Can't go wrong with that list.
Nope.
No, you can't go wrong on that list at all. And thank you once again for the supporters and everybody who participated in the survey. Me and the Fizz, we got into this discussion yesterday about this, but part of the reason why I did this podcast too was just to give just a nod and appreciation to our culture and just to kind of carry on tradition in a sense. Just acknowledge tradition because, you know, me being a proud West Indian, you know, I have Trinidadian roots, yourself, you know, Jamaican, Guyanese roots. Food is a big part of our culture. That soul food aspect of it, it's a huge part of our culture.
Huge. It's huge. I'm just agreeing with you.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, what I love about West Indian food is it's almost like most of it was either scraps or leftovers of what others wanted to use.
Mm-hmm.
And we made it into delicacies.
Yeah.
We made it into something that was sought after.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not trying to get into history lessons or anything like that. But at the end of the day, West Indian food was never based on the elite.
Right.
And in my opinion, the food is elite.
Mm-hmm.
You have people all over the world trying to replicate it.
Right.
Trying to figure out ways to mass produce it. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not just in Toronto.
Yeah.
It extends beyond Toronto.
Right.
And I think that's just a testament to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, even like, you know, cornmeal porridge or peanut porridge or something mm-hmm. like that in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You eat that sopped up with some hardo bread, bro, that'll fill you and keep you strong till like in the afternoon, even if you're doing hard back labor work.
Mm-hmm. Or you're working
out.
You're
frosted flakes,
mm-hmm.
you're friggin' starving by 9 a.m. Right?
No,
so
it's true.
I don't just, and again, if I'm biased, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
But I don't think that what I'm saying isn't true. I think that the food is every bit as reflective of how strong and beautiful our culture is.
100%.
Than it is our music and everything else that we celebrate out there.
Yeah, 100%. Because I'll speak to myself. I know we're wrap this up just now, but I'll speak for myself. Like, and we had this conversation yesterday. For myself, I learned how to cook. Part of the reason why I wanted to learn how to cook was because I came from a culture like both my parents cooked. You know, my mother, you know, she was a cook, and my father, you know, when he was alive, he also threw down in the kitchen too. And as great as my mom used to cook, there was some meals that she couldn't even touch my father on. Like, my father used to make the best callaloo. Like, she couldn't, she wouldn't even make callaloo. Like, when it was time to make callaloo, she would leave it to my pops. You know what I mean? And especially when I got to the point where, you know, I became like late teens and stuff, and I moved out early, born and raised in the South Shore, but I moved out early. And for me, I was like, you know what? I got to learn how to take this from her. You know what I mean? Like, at least take this kind of tradition from her.
Carry it forward.
Yeah, carry it forward. Because for her, like, watching here, and I'm sure many of you listeners, yourself, I'm sure you've experienced this too. You watch the love and the passion that they put into those meals. Like, you know, by the time we had gatherings, you know, the main focus was the food, and that just united everybody. So for myself, I was like, not the fact that it tasted good, but that's what brought us together a lot of times.
And you know what? But what you're saying is 100% correct.
Mm-hmm.
But it is about the food.
Yeah.
Any gathering, any get together, any gathering of people, it is absolutely about the food.
Mm-hmm.
You have bars out there that sell hamburgers and wings and fries, and if they don't know how to do that properly, they're out of business.
Yep.
It doesn't matter how many cold beers or what variety of beers they have on tap and how many big screens they have.
The wings,
the food
ain't good.
Is shit. Yeah. Nobody's going there.
Yeah.
From a food standpoint, food is huge, and it's always been huge in West Indian population. And I feel you on the fact that you wanted to carry that forward, right? Mm-hmm. As a proud West Indian, I think every proud West Indian should know. Yeah. How to cook at least a couple dishes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Not to say you have to be like on, you know, you have to cook every single thing, because I'm still learning myself. But like for me, when I moved, that was my big thing. I was like, I didn't want to be in a situation where, say, I moved, you know, thousands of miles away. I'm like, man, I can never have roti again because I don't know how to make it. Or I can't have bacon again because I don't know how to make, you know, so one day I sat back with my mom and I'm like, okay, teach me how to do this. And I sat with my, you know, my older sisters and, you know, my brother and stuff. And I'm like, yo, show me how to make this, show me how to make that. And that's where it became. So for us, like, I'm the last of six siblings. All of us, with the exception of maybe one of my siblings, all of us cook, you know, every one of us cook, you know what I mean? And that's, and I think that's where that we took that, you know, we like, without even knowing, I think we kind of took that tradition. Even my nephew now, my nephew's a head chef, shout out to Jordan, but like, same thing. I know that came from growing up with us and watching my mom put that work and, you know, having that appreciation for that, the love and passion that she had for cooking in the kitchen, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, just like you, I moved out in my early 20s, and at first my number one reason for learning how to cook those foods was to be able to feed myself the way I wanted to eat.
Right.
But, you know, approaching 40, you know, I have three children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important for me for them to understand and know and enjoy the foods that come from our culture.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. my kids are biracial. My wife is white. She's not West Indian.
Right.
But she has completely adopted our culture.
Right.
You know, like, and that was also important for me, too. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I needed her to be a part of that as well. And it was easy because she was already in line with that.
Right.
But, you know, between me and her, we're able to produce those foods for my kids to enjoy.
Right.
So they know about rice and peas. They know about oxtail. They know about corn soup. They know about every form of jerk and kingfish stewed on and escovitch and all of that stuff, because that's how we fed them. We feed them other ways as well. Because I will say, unless you're like, you know, literally running track on a daily basis,
you know, you can't eat all this.
You
all
can't
the
eat
time.
That all yeah, the time. Yeah, I mean, there's a difference, right? We're in a different culture, a different climate.
Right.
When you're in the West Indies and it's like 30 degrees at like 9 a.m., you're sweating out a lot of that.
Right. Exactly.
You
know,
when you're sitting at your desk all day in minus 30, you ain't burning that.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that's just putting on weight. So you gotta manage your input of that, but. Mm. You know, the reality is my kids understand that food and they associate it with their culture.
Yeah. And I think that's the most important thing. Just carrying that forward, because like I said, like I look at my parents, like I said, my father passed away. My mother's getting older. So it's like you want to be able to make sure like that goes along with them. Because like even with my mom, like even talking with her yesterday, she's like, the reason why she learned how to cook and had a passion for it is because my grandmother had a shop that she was running in all. You know, all her siblings and stuff were there to help. They had to learn how to cook and help. And that's how she learned to have a passion for that. And not everybody from them became cooks and stuff, but her and, you know, a couple of my uncles did. So, you know, so for us, that was like the biggest thing, you know. And I think we're in the unique position, too, of being West Indian culture, you know, as well as being Canadian, you know, coming from Montreal in our cases, and having the advantage of having different, touching different cultures of the West Indies, you know, West Indian society, you know what I mean? That ecosystem, and just having different foods and trying a patty and trying, you know, like Guyanese food, having, you know, food from Barbados and Haitian food. And we're in that unique position where we had a chance to dabble in all of that. So that's
right.
You know, it's cultivated who we are in a sense, you know what I mean? So we come from a unique perspective. So this podcast was an honor to that for sure.
100%.
You know, and on that note, Hafiz, thank you so much for coming on the stoop today.
Much love, brother. Thank you for
having me. Yes, sir. I knew, you know, we had these conversations over the years, man. And I'm like, yeah, anytime I thought about doing like a foodie podcast, I'm like, yeah, I got to definitely bring you on the stoop and have a drink. And, you know, we sit back and we have this conversation.
Yeah, let me take down one more Angostura before I go.
Yes. Oh, yeah. 100%. 100%. Much love, brother. Thank you. Man. Thank you. Thank you all for tuning in to the stoop today. As always, I am appreciative. Special shout out goes out to the friend of the podcast and West Indian foodie, Hafiz Ghaffour. Thanks, brother, for joining me and discussing these inductees for the West Indian Food Hall of Fame. Personally, I think it was a great group to go in to be inducted, but I know some of you might debate that, and that's cool. We all have our differences here and there when it comes to that, but as long as you embrace and appreciate the culture, I'm good. Even if I think you're dead wrong about having anything over roti, but, you know, I ain't saying nothing. Much love, as always. And as usual, to listen to more podcast shows,
make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. And also, don't forget, starting Monday, October 16th, South Shore Ave will be hitting your favorite apps. You'll be able to find my podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Podbean. On top of the foundation website, SouthShoreAv.com, make sure you tune in under the name South Shore Ave. And one other thing, the Ave podcast will be starting back next week as well as we drop our NBA previews for the Eastern and Western Conference. That episode will be out NBA opening night, October 17th, Tuesday, October 17th, right at 12:01 a.m. So when you're getting ready for work the next morning, you know where to find that episode, right? Right. And then to end off the week, we'll be wrapping up season 2 of The Stoop with a couple of interviews, which I can't wait for you to hear. Keep it locked to South Shore Ave, all right? For Hafiz Gafoor, this is Cal C. And you've just tuned in to The Stoop on South Shore Ave Radio. And I hope he made you hungry as hell. Normally, I'd say peace right about now, but to get serious for just a quick second here, I should point out something right now. The USA soccer team lost this week, and with that, they lost their bid to make it to the World Cup next year for the first time in 32 years. And I know this really hurts a nation that barely watches soccer. I get it. But you know what? Better luck next time. All you can do is prepare for 2022. And who did they lose to, you ask? Well, they lost to this island with a lot of heart and soul. This island full of loving people and an island rich in culture and who loves to have fun and love to fet. What country is that again? What country is that again? Oh, yeah.